This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Beto versus the Prez, and Democrats and Republicans might have an agreement. We might not have a wall. We might have the chance of the government not being shut down in the next couple of days. A lot of mites mixed in there. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. In Atlanta and all over the country, late on Monday, people are talking about that. The buzz on Peachtree and in your neck of the woods is that the lawmakers on the Hill, part of this whole negotiation team, apparently reached an agreement in principle to avoid a shutdown. But what does that mean? The president still has the power to not sign any kind of a deal. We only have a couple of days. We could see another shutdown, or are we going to see this shutdown averted? I hope it's averted, because to me it doesn't do anything in the right direction for the people who are struggling, the people, frankly, that we need to get us safely to destinations, to save us when some horrific things happen and the Coast Guard's there for you, and frankly in other positions that our government workers are part of with this partial shutdown. We saw the pinches of the families, the young families, that happened when the last shutdown took place. And I hope it doesn't happen again this time around. So what we do know is there is apparently a deal maybe to be had, at least a temporary deal. It's not anywhere near the money that the president wanted for the wall, but it's $1.375 billion for border barriers. If the Prez signs it, it does stop a partial government shutdown that would happen over the weekend. Will he sign it or won't he sign it? I mean, who knows? It was an interesting day in El Paso because you had people screaming in one rally that it was all lies and falsehoods what the president was saying about the border city. And then on the other side, you had people that were screaming, build the wall, the wall must happen, that kind of thing. And it means just split down the middle almost anywhere you go, and it's no different in El Paso and Juarez. I've talked about this before. I worked in El Paso, Texas for Channel 9, KTSM. It was one of my big breaks in television, and I actually enjoyed it. I spoke fluent Spanish. My Spanish now is a CSC. So I spent some time covering the Mexican elections, and boy, I saw some things I think I'll never forget. But at that time, even though there were horrific amounts of people crossing the border, and a lot of them on the backs of these coyotes who would just take them right across the Rio Grande, it was crazy for me to see. It's just so much worse and so much different now at this point. And of course, then there's the legal backup and those that are seeking asylum. And we won't get deep on that here because we've done it. We've gone deep again and again talking about the same things. What we do know now is the White House isn't saying much of anything, but he holds the power of the pen, the Prez. Does he sign this into law or not? And in 4 days, we'll know, much more whether that's obviously going to happen or not. And in the meantime, some of the buzz, and this is what America Tonight is all about. What is the buzz in your backyard? What is the buzz in my backyard? Also has to do with, as we move away from the weather, as to whether or not we're going to see a shutdown, the weather in Hawaii. I mentioned this in a previous hour that I had a conversation with a couple that just got out of Maui, and they narrowly avoided this, and they had young kids, but just a historic storm. The trees power out, 191 mile an hour winds, because I'll make sure I get that right, 191 mile an hour winds and snow in Maui. And you know what? There is a volcano in Maui, and there's higher regions, but these were in the lower areas. So when they say historic, they mean historic, because it's unprecedented that you would see that. The storm's biggest blow was on the Big Island's
towering peak of Mauna Kea, that's where they really had those wind gusts, and it blasted the summit. And they say, you know, it happened late on Sunday, that it's the strongest wind that they've ever seen over there. And, you know, they had to close the mountain because of the visitor station, because of that severe weather and the visibility dropped below 50 feet and et cetera. And Haleakala, they had some snow that fell on Haleakala, which is in Maui and is very unusual. Although I was, the last time I was in Hawaii, I went up to Haleakala and there was some ice. I mean, the difference in the elevation is incredible, but not 191 mile an hour winds. I mean, that is a story that is worth talking about right at the top of this show, because it's that unusual that you would be talking about that. Yes, they can have crazy winds and weather and have to batten the hatches, but not when you're talking about those kinds of gusts. So you can't withstand that, and that's why the power went out in some areas, and there was a little bit of a panic, because they're not used to seeing that. They're not used to seeing that kind of, frankly, that kind of weather. The other thing that is being talked about, you know, of course, again, whether or not you've got the negotiators reaching an agreement, but will the president sign it? They have it in principle, and they're drafting it. The final draft really would come on Tuesday, but you know what the broad strokes are and what the money is. You had the president in El Paso with a big crowd. You had Beto O'Rourke with a big crowd, and they were rallying in a much different direction. And then you've got all kinds of Democrats coming out of the woodwork who are declaring for 2020. And you know it was going to be a big crowd, like four baseball teams. But it's interesting to see the people who are declaring they're running for president. It's, you know, everybody from Elizabeth Warren to Kamala Harris to people that you didn't even realize were on the Hill, honestly. And then some of those with bigger names. You kind of have to kind of figure, when you look at the race, that it's still early, but you've got a lot of, certainly got a lot of women, like Amy Klobuchar's running too from Minnesota, and the Minnesota Democrat announced that she was going to run over the weekend, but, you know, how much backing does she have versus Kamala Harris versus you know, a slew of others, frankly, that have declared. It does make it kind of interesting in a way, if the field narrows, there are some men who have declared, but it really could be the female Democrats versus the president in 2020, and it does set up a very interesting scenario and certainly something to look at as we get closer to the time where there's even more testing in Iowa to see who comes out ahead, and, you know, does the fundraising cripple some? What do the polls say? And how long does XYZ candidate hang in there? And that's what it's about, who gets the backing. All right, stay with us. We're up against it. I will meet you on the flip side, and we're talking about numbers next. We can count.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Go to GCNteam.com or call 855-GCN-MALL. That's 855-426-6255. GCNteam.com or 855-426-6255. Lose weight and look great with ASAP. As slim as possible.
Number one international best-selling author, Matthew David Hurtado's pain was simple. Lyme disease bankrupted him in 2009, watching bankers take everything from his family after building a seven-figure business from his couch. God called him to ministry to teach prosperity based on pain he could not tolerate in others' lives. IRS, creditors, car loans, debt. It's the Babylonian system, and you have to escape it before it's too late. Haven't you ever wanted to wake up from this nightmare? Matthew David's free quick study guide shows you what to do today to build lasting wealth in any economy. His discovery he made? It's all consciousness. Get Matthew's seven-figure quick study guide for clarity, certainty, and a proven strategy to build wealth once and for all. Visit EscapeRightNow.com. Do it now. It's free. EscapeRightNow.com for a prosperous future ahead with peace of mind. EscapeRightNow.com.
It's time to join the Tahibo Tea Club. Tahibo Tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo Tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Tahibo Tea is available for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Dial 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com. All orders ship immediately the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222. That number again, 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com.
I say this all the time, numbers haunt us and they help us. So it's time for another edition of We Can Count. As we dive into it, let's start with some ugly numbers. First of all, the 100,000 pounds of chicken that have been recalled nationally due to misbranding, and they say an undeclared allergen is also part of that. So let me give you some of the particulars of it. Vicks Acquisition is recalling that chicken, those pounds I mentioned. They say the allergen eggs. So some of these packages have been affected, like the packages of Happy Foodie Bloody Mary Inspired Chicken. That's a mouthful. Southeast Grocers Masala Chicken and Southeast Grocers Mediterranean Herb Chicken. Just know, check your chicken. And the Happy Foodie Food, that's a mouthful, man. That was shipped to stores in Alabama, Florida, if you're listening to us, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And I've seen this, actually. I've seen this chicken. So it's more common in the stores than you might not recognize, you know, the brand. But if you look around, you look a little closer, especially in the states I mentioned, then you would see what I'm talking about. And, boy, you know, it just brings up that whole thing with food supply and how safe is the food supply and all that sort of stuff. But 100,000 pounds of chicken is some of that you just, yeah, you don't want to be touching that. All right, how about McDonald's? McDonald's is bringing donut sticks, since we're sticking with food, to breakfast. So, you know, they're always experimenting. A lot of these fast food places are with what can they bring, how can they lure people in. And I guess it's going to depend which McDonald's, but donut sticks are basically $2.59 for half dozen with a small cup of coffee, and then they kind of move up from there. They're testing them, and they say, because people like donuts. So they've got these cinnamon-covered donuts, you know, fried donuts, and just for fun, because this is a numbers thing with We Can Count, a six-piece order has 280 calories, 13 grams of fat, 9 grams of sugar. Whoa. Shut the front door. I mean, I don't know. 280 calories isn't too bad if you think about it. Because remember, they're trying to keep up with the Joneses or the other burger places. In late January, Burger King brought back funnel cake fries. And you see them all over the place. They sold them, you know, like maybe 10 years ago or whatever it was. So they brought those back. And that's what it's about. It's about what's the competition doing. What can we do? How do we differentiate ourselves? And what do they want? What can we put on the menu that is going to draw people in? And maybe if they're putting that on the menu, maybe people who normally wouldn't come in. I like McDonald's coffee. So you figure from the morning you weren't going to eat anything else on the menu and you wanted to grab a couple of Joe and something that was more like a pastry, well, it may work. I guess it depends on the area. Somebody will test that. That's why they're testing it. All right, I love this. How about this story about Apple is letting veterans track their health records on the iPhone? I think we mentioned that one time before, but in the world of technology, does it get any better than that? So following a visit to a VA healthcare facility, if the participating vet's Apple device automatically gets updated health records within 24 hours. I think that's brilliant because they're looking for that, whatever it is. It's the medications, all of that's laid out. So they got like 200 providers in the program, like the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland's doing it, Stanford Healthcare in Palo Alto's doing it. So there's other places that are doing the same thing. Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles is doing it. John Hopkins is doing it in Baltimore. It's just the latest thing that the VA is bringing into the fold. And the fact that the vets can sign up with their military credentials inside the health app, because they need their records, frankly, and people want them, and then they'd have them within 24 hours. So, you know what I say to that? I say, bravo. I mean, it makes complete sense to me that you'd be able to have access to those records so quickly, especially when you need them and you're trying to figure out medications, and you're always asked that. And if you have several different appointments and you have them at different places, then, you know, there would be something that would be easy for, you know, easy way for you to pull it up. Let's put it that way. All right. Babies and flying can be tricky. And why is it tricky? It's tricky because people get annoyed, or people think with the noise, or people think the babies are too young. And Andy Cohen was heavily criticized. He's one of the stars on the Bravo network for his first child, the baby boy, was born February 4th. But over the weekend, there were pictures of him traveling on a plane with this baby that was just a couple days old, pretty much. And he posted the pictures all over the place. They brought it on himself. He posted them on Instagram and of his baby, Benjamin Allen Cohen. And instead of getting this great reaction where people were high-fiving the travel and this or that, people instead were commenting that, oh my gosh, he's way too young for you to be traveling with a baby. So like American Airlines lets babies as young as 2 days old travel on their planes. Southwest requires that babies have to be 2 weeks or older. Delta, 7 days or older, unless the parents have a doctor's note. And, you know, look, I even looked this up, but it's out there everywhere. The Mayo Clinic's website says air travel's okay for most infants, but you just got to take the precautions, and that's, you know, what the scoop is on that. So, good for him, I say. I don't understand. What's the big deal about him bringing bringing the baby on a private plane, no less. So it's not as if he was crowding somebody out and getting all those dirty looks because of that, because he wasn't getting those dirty looks for it, because he wasn't flying commercial, people. Give him a break. He's a new dad. Let him breathe, for goodness sake. Oh, when I saw that story, people are too involved in what I guess he's sort of a celebrity, right? And in what celebrities are doing with their children. I mean, if we knew more about what was going on in the country, if we knew more about what was happening in our own backyards, I don't know. And I'm not, like, lecturing anyone. I'm just saying it's fascinating to me, the thing that will set people off in policing other people's behavior but not paying attention to what's happening that affects us in the country. It's like I say about voting. I mean, you can hate every aspect of it, but thank goodness we live in the greatest country on the face of the earth where we do have democratic elections. We can debate all the problems in between, but I don't get why we don't have people crawling all over the place on election, you know, weeks. Why isn't that, I don't know, why isn't that a crazier time? Why aren't people more involved, I guess, is the way to say that. All right, and I happen to see this Gallup poll, so I'm going to bring this, speaking of being involved, I'm going to bring this to the table. Americans are optimistic about their personal finances. Are you? It's climbed to levels, they say, not seen more than in 16 years, with 69% saying they expect to be financially better off this time next year. 69%, that's pretty optimistic. So optimism is running high. 50% say they're in better shape than they were a year ago. 10 years ago, the Great Recession was nearing an end. Thank goodness. Remember that? It was brutal. People lost a ton of money. More than half the public, 54, say they were worse off. Now with unemployment below the 1998 levels, the job market is certainly growing steadily. We can see that. The number saying that they are worse off than a year ago has dropped to 26%, the lowest level since October of 2000. And all of this is information that was crunched by Gallup. And I happened to get a hold of it today, and I was reading the numbers, and it's not surprising to me. I mean, Americans are typically less positive about how their finances have changed over the past year than about where they're headed. And they're still saying it's much better post-recession, and of course it is. So that number is climbing. And if we look at it this way, only 11 times in 109 polls going back to 1976 have at least half of the people polled said they were in better financial shape than they had been a year prior. So go figure. All right, stay with us. More coming your way next here on the show.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
Congressional negotiators say they've come up with an agreement to avoid another government shutdown. GOP Senator Richard Shelby.
We reached an agreement in principle between us on all the Homeland Security and the other six bills. Our staffs are going to be working feverishly to put all of the particulars together.
But will President Trump sign it? New Yorker staff writer Susan Glasser on CNN.
I'm not sure that he will agree to it, but I think they clearly are still looking at either declaring a national emergency or trying to take executive action to reprogram military funds to use for additional construction.
Fox News reports the deal includes only $1.3 billion for physical barriers along 55 miles of border territory in the Rio Grande Valley. You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-561-5716. That's 800-561-5716. Again, 800-561-5716.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-919-5435. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-919-5435. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-919-5435. 1-800-919-5435.
Welcome to Forbes Books at Bedtime with Kate Delaney and Greg Stebbin.
Speaking with James McCann, he's written a fabulous book called Startups and the Tech Revolution, The Essential Guide. And let me tell you, this really, really resonates for me. It resonates with my nieces and nephews, and I'm thinking for the parents out there, what a great idea for you to get a copy of the book and also to get a copy of the book for your kids because of where we're meeting in the middle and the different ends of looking at technology and where it's all headed, and imagine those rich, important discussions that you can have. So, James, thanks so much for coming back on.
My pleasure.
And along those same lines, as you were writing this and pulling this guide together, and I love it, you call it the Essential Guide, who were you thinking about? Who did you have in mind as the reader or the audience?
So when I was sort of transitioning out of sort of full-time executive life into this world of investing, which is what I do now, I had to go to many different sources to sort of build a picture of what was going on. And so it looked to me like there was a bit of a gap between, you know, the headlines and the articles in the mainstream news about this big change that's coming. And then everybody who is inside of the tech bubble who know the minute detail of everything that's going on. And so the guide is really written for the people in that gap, which is frankly most of society. It's the people, you know, who know a little, who know enough to know that they need to know more, but don't quite know where to go to start the journey. And so the book's written so that they can start that journey of really understanding, you know, what's going on, and then starting to explore the entrepreneurial route as one of the ways of filling the gap and of transitioning as the economy changes. There's lots of references in the book, you know, of other places to go and look for more information on topics, but that was why it was called The Essential Guide.
As you were writing the book, and now that the book is out, you must have a lot of interesting conversations with people in the gap. And what kinds of things do you hear from them about their fears or their resistances? And then once we understand what you're hearing from others, what do you say to them to motivate them to get a positive view of the future going forward?
That's a great question. I mean, what often happens is that people start asking questions in the context of their children or in the context of their grandchildren or their nieces and nephews. And as we begin to explore that, it very quickly, you know, dawns on them that this also impacts upon them. So, you know, if I had a wish is that people buy the book for their grandkids or their kids, just read it before you pass it on to them so that you pick up the knowledge and hopefully are more prepared for the changes that are coming. I think people initially, though, are some people are just, frankly, don't really know what's going on and what's coming. And then there are some people who are who know enough to be very concerned. And what I'm hoping is that people can kind of move from either of those two states to a place where they know this is coming, they understand broadly what is going to be happening, and they're motivated to actually begin themselves, for themselves, their family, their business, to start to transition so that they can really make the most of this, and that they're willing to start to put pressure on society in general and our elected representatives in particular to start to prepare much, much more quickly for the changes that are heading our way as a human society.
Wow, so that goes along with the same lines of, in this gap, how is education going to change? It would have to change because that's going to be the key to success to this whole thing, right?
It will be. I mean, it will be, but it won't be quick enough. So, you know, bizarrely, education is one of the most change resistant parts of our economy, particularly, funnily enough, university education. It hasn't changed that much in probably 200 years. The reality is that we're going to have to start to prepare people, you know, young children, for the world that they're going to be inhabiting, not the world that their grandparents inhabited. We're going to have to teach them the skills that they need to be able to adapt, to tool and retool throughout their lives, to adapt to this very rapidly changing world. You know, the days when you could sort of go to college, spend $600,000 on 2 degrees back to back, come out with a postgraduate degree in X, and then do X, you know, for the rest of your life and retire with a gold watch at 65, those days are gone. You know, there is nobody coming out of college today that is going to follow that path with their lives. And people are going to have to tool and retool probably every 5 or 7 years throughout their lives in order to adapt to the way that the world's changed. It may be that all of us will need to, you know, work 4 days a week and have one day of kind of study release to be preparing for the changes that are happening as we're working. You know, but society is going to have to change, and we're going to have to figure out these new ways of doing things in order for the human beings in the tech age to be able to cope with the speed at which the world around them is changing. Because, it, you know, we change at an evolutionary pace, but the tech world is going to change at a tech pace. And those two things are absolutely and completely different from one another.
We're talking with James McCann. He's the author of the new Forbes book, Startups and the Tech Revolution, The Essential Guide. And boy, the word essential, it is completely accurate. This is the essential guide. We're talking about the tech revolution coming and who might be sort of caught in the middle as left behind, or how you can prevent yourself from being caught in the middle, or as James calls it, in that gap. One of the things I want to ask you about, James, is you said earlier you envisioned that a parent or a grandparent would buy this book and hand it off to their kids or their grandkids after reading it. And I want to build on that idea a little bit, because it seems to me that at least today, those two populations, because of their ages, actually have very different sets of skills and experiences that could help the other. So I would think that a smart parent in particular, doing that with maybe a child in high school or going off to college, would then be able to engage with their children and, in a sense, kind of become a startup of a family to help each other make sure they're in the fast lane and in a place where they can really excel and achieve their goals, their economic goals, their career goals in this changing economy, in this changing workplace.
I think you're spot on. You know, I think that it's going to be easier for younger people who are, you know, who've been less conditioned to think the way the world is today to imagine what the world may be tomorrow. And therefore, I think that intergenerational dialogue is going to be absolutely vital. At the other end of the spectrum, you know, advances in science and medicine mean that we're going to be living longer and longer and hopefully healthier and healthier lives. And so you're going to have, you know, potentially five or six generations of a family that are alive at the same time in 15 or 20 years' time. And those people are going to require help. And the things that our society values are going to shift, the work that human beings will be able to do that machines and artificial intelligence can't, is going to be the softer things. It's going to be the human-to-human interactions. And those things today are fairly undervalued by our society. Carers, you know, homemakers, mothers, those things don't get valued highly in society. But those are the things that we're going to be able to do that the machines can't. So we're really going to have to rethink this. And I think the young will be able to imagine that new world far better than frankly, some of the older people like you and me, that, you know, who've been around a long time and who've got used to thinking about the world as it is today.
But I'm hopeful that we as the older people, I'm not sure how I feel about that, James, but I'm just going to let it ride for now. But I'm hoping that we as, I'm going to let's say the more experienced people, will be able to help the younger generation, our kids or our grandkids, learn things about better human relationships, better negotiating skills, just bringing our experience so that if, when the young come to us and say, this is happening, we can say, well, I remember a time when I was in that situation, or I know someone that was in that situation. So that our experience and our skills aren't lost, but we're able to then feed them back to them and their vision of the future.
That's exactly right. And I think it's that dialogue and conversation that's going to help society as a whole to sort of shift from where it is today to where it, hopefully it can go to. And don't get me wrong, I am 80% excited by the opportunity of the next 20 years. You know, we could eliminate heavy, boring, dangerous, routine, manual work from society. And that's probably 70% of the work that's done by people today is work which is those things. And we are going to be able to replace that work by machines and artificial intelligence. The question for society is, what do we choose to do with the people who do that work today? How do we help them transition to something far, far better for them and for their families? And you know, for their well-being. And if we can do that, then this world can be a much, much better place for the majority of humanity. But that is not what will happen, you know, naturally. What is going to happen naturally is that a, you know, a couple of countries, the US and China, and a few big companies within those countries that have access to this huge, huge sets of data are going to become immensely wealthy because of these transitions that are happening.
Wow, perfect place to end this, James. I didn't mean to step on your thought there. Finish your thought.
No, and if we can find a way of helping society to profit from these changes, then you can imagine a world within 20 years where, you know, the bad jobs are gone and people are able to choose to do the things they want to do and find purposeful with their lives, and society overall can function. And that, I think, is the most exciting and the most optimistic view of how these changes could help society overall.
Wow. Again, a great wrap there. And this is a book that is essential, so it's perfect that it's in the title. James McCann, Startups and the Tech Revolution, The Essential Guide. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. It was my pleasure.
It's time to start drinking Tahibo tea. Tahibo tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Every week, someone calls in with the story of another miraculous recovery. Order your Tahibo tea now for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Call today, 818-883-7222. Again, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. All orders ship the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com. It's time to join the Tahibo Tea Club. Tahibo tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Tahibo tea is available for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Dial 818-883-7222 or buy online at drinksupertea.com. All orders ship immediately the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222. That number again, 818-883-7222. Or buy online at drinksupertea.com.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Know someone with a drinking or drug problem? Learn how to get sober after we share these stories.
I was 35 with two beautiful children when my life and addiction started to spiral out of control. After my divorce, I went into a depression cycle and started drinking more often and using prescription drugs. After my second DWI and arrest, my ex-husband threatened to take our children away from me.
I was 17 when I became addicted to heroin and meth. I thought I could quit on my own, but I couldn't. It hit me when I was arrested.
An incredible writer with us. He's in our virtual green room right now. His name is William DeBerg. And I say that because I find myself, and you know, I talk about how I'm a voracious reader and I've read a lot of books lately, but I'll tell you what, he's written a book called Serpent and Savior, White Spiritual Boy, and one that I am almost through with called Divided We Stand. And we know that the mothership where I'm broadcasting from is in the state of Texas. So this really, really stuck out for me. William, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's talk about Divided We Stand. First of all, you write these novels that involve things that have happened in the world, but yet you tell this story where we really get lost in this story. And if you take what has happened and you marry it to your words, it really brings events to life. I thought about that today. That, I think, is the way to describe your powerful writing. So tell us about the main character of the novel and what he's going through.
Well, the main character is a young Mexican-American general who goes through and has many decorations and a couple silver stars and all, moves up very quickly. And he eventually ends up at the Pentagon, but he then meets a group of generals who are sort of monitoring what we might call the deep state. There is names for the globalist empire and things like that, but he eventually has to make a decision whether to join up with him or not. And there's another also Mexican-American general, Marine General John Hernandez, who is about his same age, and the two of them get involved in this. And the book deals with a lot of the issues he faces in his marriage. There's a lot of turmoil with his own family. He has a love-hate relationship with his brother because his brother, one of his brothers was killed with a drug overdose, and then his other brother is an investigative journalist investigating the whole thing. He gets killed by the cartel, and so he's got all these things that are going on in his life. At the same time, he has to make this momentous decision, and it deals with a lot of the issues that have been brought out in the conspiracy world, the CIA and drugs. It gets into some of the events of September 11th and all that. But that's basically it in a nutshell. He faces a lot of turmoil in his personal life. And that's the goal of my novels, is to tell a lot of the conspiracy point of view, or truther point of view, if you want to call it, in the context of a really fast-moving political thriller.
Yeah, and that's it. That you nailed it right there. You talk about it, the Pentagon. You talk about September 11th and what happened there, the Pentagon, etc. And you mentioned the Pentagon, etc. And what decisions, you know, he's got to ultimately make. And what do you hope people take out of that? That they open their mind to what is, and that's what I tried to say in the beginning, to historically what happened, to kind of the truther side of things, and they make up their own mind?
Well, again, my books probably, you know, in a way could be called historical fiction. I sort of refer to them as conspiracy fiction, but historical fiction. And I have all these historical sources, mostly secondary, and they're, you know, of varying quality, but generally I've relied on each book I've written on a couple main sources. And these sources are just wonderful books, and you can read them, and they're very, you know, factual, nonfiction. But my job was to both educate and entertain. So you can get a lot of the essence of this truther position on these different events, but in the context of a political thriller. So if you just want to read a political thriller, you can do that. But if you want to also have access to all the sources that can allow you to, as you say, make up your own mind. One of the things that I think all of us who have been in the truther community, we start out with a certain point of view, and then after we start doing some research, we come to a different point of view. And that's what, you know, the book is there for, if anybody wants to go that route.
Yeah, and I love that you said that. What do you come away with? And it depends on, as you read it, what you think of the events, and then certainly the references you have there, and you have them laid out on in every single chapter as you talk about a lot of different events related to 9/11, etc. And again, I want to remind everybody, as you're listening to us, the name of the book is called Divided We Stand. You can get it on Amazon.com. How'd you come up with the character? How'd you choose the character? Because you fleshed that out in the beginning a little bit for us, and talked about a brother, etc., talked about investigative reporting. But how the main character, how'd you come up with him?
Well, I've written, of course, two other previous books, and all of them tie into some aspect of my life, you know, places I've been. Not always. Sometimes I have to do a lot of research, but this was one that was based in Texas, where I've spent most of my adult life, and so I'm familiar with a lot of the type of people that would be in this, and I just felt that a lot of people might be perhaps caught off guard to some extent by having this particular character, because you know, he may not be ordinarily somebody that would be associated with the truther movement, and but he goes through the ranks, and he ends up with this momentous decision. So yes, his character is based on people I've known, and probably mostly the people I've encountered in my life in Texas here.
What was it like putting this together, William, for you? Because you do have all those sources. I love how you described it, like it's historical fiction, that the idea is to entertain and educate. But a lot of research had to go into this. How tough was it to pull it together and weave it into this story?
Well, generally, my books start with a couple major sources, which give me the outlines of the story I want to tell. But then I really let the story unfold, all the twists and turns. You know, there's a lot of twists and turns in the book. And all that sort of stuff develops as I go along. And often, I don't know exactly how I'm going to end the book. Sometimes that's a real puzzle to me. But thus far, all of my books have come up with what I consider good endings. But you just sort of let it unfold. And the dialogue, when I first started, I was a little worried about the dialogue portion. But you just sort of listen to the people that you've known in your life, how they talk and some of the phrases, and eventually it gets into the, the dialogue in the book.
Yeah, I don't want to give anything away, but it's interesting, and you're very descriptive in your writing. I love it. There's one scene where you talk about Carlos entered the smoky bar area, which faced the stage where a couple of partially nude women were dancing provocatively. He ordered a vodka and lime and rapidly scanned the room. He tried to imagine what Zoran might look like in an unlikely event that he was in the room. I love that, how you flush it out. So in other words, and you said this, historical fiction, it really is storytelling matched with some of the events in the world. And you said this, but you hope people walk away with a sense of whatever they want to take away from it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you can read it as a political thriller. You can read it as, you know, in a very distilled or essential form, a lot of the truth or arguments on various events and all. But, I mean, it's one of those things where you just sort of imagine, you know, somebody, once you develop the character, what would they be thinking in a situation like that. And then you have characters from all over the world. You have to put in their accents, their dialogues, and things like that. But I think that people will, and I think, to be honest with you, people know that the CIA has been involved to some extent.
Yeah.
You can see the Netflix TV series and things like that. People know about this sort of thing. But I go into a lot more detail, and a lot of the historical sources are there for anybody that really wants to get, deep into the facts of these things.
And again, the book is called Divided We Stand. William DeBerg, he is the author of it. In putting the book together, like you said, it's like a puzzle at the end. You're not even sometimes sure how it's going to end. When you finish a book and you wrap it up and you know you've nailed it, what is that feeling like?
When I get to the final sort of, not the final editing and all, but when I finally realize how I'm going to end it, that's a real real thrill, because then you know it's just a matter of time just to fill in all the little details and all. But it's a package that's very complete. But again, you never know exactly how it's going to end until you get further along into it. So.
I love it. So we'll tell everyone again, you can pick up not only this book, but all of William's books, Amazon.com. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Again, thank you for having me, Kate.
It's time to start drinking Tahibo Tea. Tahibo Tea comes from the inner bark of the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. The Tahibo tree never gets sick, never gets infected, and never gets infested. As a result, it contains antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. Tahibo Tea can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening condition due to infection, diabetes, or cancer. Every week, someone calls in with the story of another miraculous recovery. Order your Tahibo Tea. tea now for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping. 1 pound makes 300 servings, which is only 12 cents per cup. Call today, 818-883-7222. Again, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. All orders ship the same day. Call now, 818-883-7222, or buy online at drinksupertea.com.